Good evening, everybody. This has been an utterly amazing WordCamp. And could we have everyone who was involved with organizing or volunteering please stand up? Jane, Steve, everyone, please stand up. No, stand up. Because of these people. Thank you. When Jane told me this was going to be better than San Francisco, I didn't believe her. And so now we have a little competition going, the San Francisco versus New York. Apparently we have to top like 750 attendees now. Man, it's a lot of people. It's a smaller city, you know? But in general, last year in New York was actually really interesting because I gave it was a much smaller WordCamp, and I gave a State of the Word presentation. It still holds the world record for being the longest State of the Word, possibly longest WordCamp presentation ever. It clocked in like 2.5 hours. And the reason, it's normally like a 45-minute talk, but New Yorkers are not shy, apparently. And you guys had no shortage of questions for me. And so, in fact, during the talk, people just started standing up and stuff, and I just didn't know what to do, so I kept talking. And so this year we decided to dispense with all the formalities for State of the Word. We're just going to do one of those a year in San Francisco. And I'd really like this to be more of a town hall. So actually, if we could turn the lights down a little bit, I'll be able to see better, and turn the house lights up a bit. Just sort of question and answers, because one of my favorite things about WordCamps has been meeting all of you guys and sort of learning everything about how you're using WordPress, what you like about it, what you're frustrated with, your favorite plugins, all those sorts of things. And this is really sort of a unique opportunity that you have so many people involved with the WordPress project here to answer almost any question you could possibly have. Okay, good. Now we got lights. We have two mics here, as Jane said. The only catch is if you ask a question, you have to say your name and pimp your blog so people will know to visit. Maybe you'll get some more Twitter followers, anything like that. So does anyone want to kick it off? I didn't put any ringers in the audience, so I figured in New York you didn't need it. All right, how about right over here?
Hi.
Oh!
I guess you have to be really tall.
You were ready for that.
Hi, my name is Michelle Moore. My blog is happinessblog.com.
Nice.
And it's really neat. But I'm not a programmer. My question is trackbacks and pingbacks.
Uh-huh.
What is the best practices way of dealing with those? And
what do you mean, in terms of approving them or sending them out?
Yes, approve them, or how do you use them well, and how can you leverage them effectively, put it that way?
Cool. Well, how I like trackbacks or pingbacks, because people sort of use them interchangeably. In WordPress, when you link to another blog post, does everyone know what pingbacks are? We can go over it. So when you link to another blog post from your blog post, WordPress, if the other blog is WordPress or some compatible software, WordPress will reach out and say, hey, I linked to you. And then that'll show up as a comment on the other blog post. So sometimes, I don't know if you've ever done this, I find myself writing really long comments sometimes. I'm like, this should really just be a post. Like this is, I'm taking up too much room in their comment space. And so I sort of use it like a remote commenting feature. I also see it where folks who are linking to my entries, I think it's really cool where someone, especially if someone links to something that's a little bit older on my blog, I can kind of see, oh, wow, someone's talking about this or this topic's being brought back up or things like that. So I sort of use it as a augmentation of my stats as well, because maybe I only got 3 hits from that person, so it didn't show up in my Google Analytics or my WordPress.com stats, but I still got a ping back from. So does that sort of answer your question about how to use them best? If you just do what you do naturally with blogging, linking to people and talking to things, it should just work.
Do you approve them?
So I check them. I moderate all the comments on my blog, and I'll visit the site. And if it doesn't look spammy or anything like that, I always approve it.
Well, but then they're in your comment listing, correct?
Yep.
And so if it kind of messes up the comment flow.
Good question.
Trying to figure out. And trackbacks and pingbacks, are they both about the same? And
effectively, yeah. On my blog, what I do is, default by WordPress, it shows it like a full comment with sort of the title of the page as the author. What I do on my blog is I actually shrink it down to just the link. So it says pingback, and then it says the title of the blog linking to it. And I think we do that on the WordPress.org blog as well. That's how I personally like it. It's really just dependent on your theme. I've seen some themes that actually separate them out. So you have comments in one place and then trackbacks separate or minimized or things like that.
Do you hurt yourself by not approving them?
No, of course not. It's your blog. You can approve or disapprove whatever you like.
But as far as Google...
Is Google giving you good juice or bad juice for that?
Right. If you prove them, are you better off than for Google juice?
I don't know the internal workings of Google. I don't think that it should impact you too much one way or another, simply because there are no follow leaks by default, because they're coming from an external thing. So I don't think it like puts you in a good neighborhood or bad neighborhood or anything like that, I think. And
thank you very much.
Because otherwise my blog wouldn't be in search engines. Thank you.
Hi, Matt.
How are you?
My name is Velma McKenzie Orr, and my blog is nonprofitpal.com. Uh-huh. And 8 months ago, I had never even heard of WordPress. Fortunately, I was looking for an answer, and two things happened that caused me to eventually get to WordPress is that I was searching so diligently and just happened one night to see a young lady on television and decided, I saw her on Rachel Maddow's show, and she said something that caught my attention. She had done something, and the way she described it is that a fifth grader, could have gotten to that situation. And I realized that I needed to know at least what a fifth grader knew. And as a result of that, I eventually hired the young lady.
I don't know. Have you seen that TV show?
Adria Richards, as my personal technology trainer.
Oh, cool.
And my question is that I think that WordPress should encourage training more because I never would have been able to install WordPress.org, which is what I operate on, if it hadn't been for Adria, because that five-minute install did not work for me. It took me a lot longer, and it was just such a blessing. So my question is, do you think that there's a way to encourage training more in the flat platform?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say we do actually a pretty poor job there right now. There's some stuff where there's like five problems you talked about, and we're trying to address each of them. One is ease of installation. You know, is the five-minute install really not? And who can do it faster than 5 minutes here? Oh, wow, that's a lot of people. Well, usually probably what they're doing is that it's built into a lot of web hosts now. So like Dreamhost, Bluehost, GoDaddy, all these guys, they have a button you can click that'll install WordPress. And what's even cooler is now a lot of them support it, well, they'll keep it updated. So they'll constantly upgrade your blog for you, so there's almost no maintenance or anything that you got to worry about. That's a really cool feature. So that's sort of making the accessibility a little better. So hopefully you don't need as much tech help to get going, but then you might still need tech help if you want to modify your theme or do some more advanced stuff with it. And that's where I feel like we have a lot of educational opportunities. I love, you know, Kathy Sierra says you don't outspend your competition, you out-educate them. And she talks about how, isn't it silly that when you buy like a Nikon camera, it's got this amazing sort of full spread layout and its color and everything like that, and then you open up the box and it's got a black and white manual in like eight languages, badly translated. Right? That's not a good experience. And the WordPress has some of that too. We have a lot of places that documentation are available. You've got the Codex. You've got different websites that talk about WordPress. A lot of people just Google things and you end up on random stuff. That's great, but I would love to see more multimodal education because different people learn in different ways. Some people like to read. Some people like to listen. Some people like to read a book. Some people like to watch videos. And two, perhaps something a little shorter because the Codex has literally thousands and thousands of pages. You could read a page every day for the next 3 years if you wanted to. So the two things we're doing there, one is a project called WordPress TV. Have you seen this yet? Yeah. So with WordPress TV, we're trying to do two things. One, we're making these screencasts that are ideally like 2 to 3 minute sort of screencasts that just tell you how to do one little thing. You know, the difference between categories and tags or what pingbacks are. Hopefully some of the questions that are being asked here might have a video that answers it. Follow up.
Well, I was just going to say, I know about WordPress TV, but I would never have found it on my own. And what happened is that because I had Adria, she was able to take me immediately. It took me 3 months to even... I was like that person where they said that you're dealing with a bunch of hackers. It took me 3 months of I call it stalking her. It took me 3 months before I decided that I was going to seek her help.
Absolutely.
And it's the best thing that I've done in a long, long time. Because not only does she know what she's about, she's truthful, and what she says she can do, she can do.
Yeah.
And as a result, I now have a blog that is going to help me help nonprofit organizations. But I never would have found all of this if I hadn't had someone who guided me to it. So that was a great advantage in having someone to point me to it.
I see it as three legs. One is the core software. We just need to make it easier with every release. And that's one thing that we try very much as a community to do. Two is the educational resources, the WordPress TV, the WordPress handbook, which we're talking about, which is a project that's going to like write like an open source WordPress book. And then there's, of course, the books you can buy, WordPress for Dummies, WordPress 2.8 Complete, all these. Actually, the For Dummies book is really good. And then finally, you hit on it, it's people, right? I mean, look at how many people we have here. WordPress enthusiasts. I mean, we're taking a beautiful Sunday out to sit in the auditorium, talk about tech stuff all day. I mean, these are people who are really passionate about it. And I want to see what we can do. WordCamps, to me, are beautiful because online, the connections only ever got so far. But when people meet and interact, it just makes the community that much stronger. And part of the community is helping people who are new to it, bringing new people in, guiding them through it, walking it through it, the things that are still too hard, or that might always be too hard, just because it is inherently a geeky thing. And I want to make it easier to connect folks like that. Perhaps that's through meetup.com, like you're doing here in New York. Maybe that's something we can do on wordcamp.org, maybe showing where people are, using the new geotagging stuff, and saying, here's 20 people in your area. You guys should all grab a beer next Friday. Something like that, I think, would be really, really powerful, both for the people who are pros with WordPress, you know, because they know a lot, and folks who are just joining the community, who are just joining the family. And by the way, welcome.
Thank you. One other thing. What I learned today as a result of being here is that I learned that the grandchildren are in charge. And so I think if you make it, see, one of the things that we are good at, older people, we're good at dealing with grandchildren. So that if we knew more about what is going on, and in fact that a lot of what's happening is the grandchildren. See, we don't do very well with the children, but we do real well with the grandchildren. So if the grandchildren would make us more aware that you're in charge, we'd probably learn more and wouldn't be so apprehensive about it. Thank you.
I also work for food. just I'm putting that out there. I've done a lot of work for food, actually. It's one of my preferred methods of payment. I guess let's bounce over here. You look familiar. Uh-oh, he's picking up the mic.
Jeff Chandler of WPTavern.com, and as if I haven't asked you enough questions today, the one question I have for you is, recently you had made a thread on the bbpress.org forums asking people what they believe should be the future of the bbpress software, and I know that recently one of the lead developers of the software is not really so much involved with it anymore, and with you coming out and asking that question, I just want to know, what do you think, what is your idea of the future of bbpress?
Sure. Do we have anyone using bbpress here? Just out of curiosity. That's a good number of folks. For a while, I wasn't really sure where bbpress was going, because it was standalone form software, but who really uses form software anymore, right? It's like, it's not a primary mode of interaction. But then at the same time, I think to myself, well, we use forms everywhere. We use bbpress like 20 different places on WordPress.org. It powers our plugin directory, we use it for support forums, all those sorts of things. And then BuddyPress came along, and BuddyPress is doing some amazing things with bbpress, how it integrates. What was it? Stand up, Andy. I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the bbpress integration look like right now? How does bbpress integration work?
Oh, it
used to be 14 steps. So he said it's now one click. You can just drop your bbpress next to your BuddyPress, press a button, and essentially they start dancing together. It's really cool. To me, BuddyPress is kind of the missing link. Because we had these forums, we had these blogs, but we didn't really have a mature way to represent a community. You know, these are people with profiles, and they do different things around the web. They're not just on this one website. They actually have a ton of stuff, and they want to message each other, and they want to form groups and do all these things that we've seen develop as sort of social norms across social networks, and just pretty much every modern website has social features. And so BuddyPress adds that. It's a social layer on top of WordPress. So I think that BuddyPress is actually going to start to pull along bbpress a lot more. And the reason I started the thread on there, because just like WordPress, it's a community-driven project. And I both wanted to see what people thought, what the existing users of bbpress felt like it should go and where it was going, and also see if anyone else wanted to help out. But, I mean, because that's how we work. I mean, there's just it's just like WordPress. I see the Drupal guys, they call Drupal duocracy, meaning that if you do it, it gets done. And that's the same for most open source projects. If you want something done, if you go and do it, it often happens. That's the best way to get new features and everything like that. So that's kind of what I'm looking for right now. And I'm excited about it. I'm going to spend a little more of my time on the BB Press project and just sort of dive back in there. I have a very strong sentimental attachment to it because it was sort of the first thing I worked on after WordPress. And I was like, everything I did wrong in WordPress, I'm going to fix in BB Press. So I'm very attached to the code and everything. I like it a lot. But we'll see where it goes.
Thank you. Robert Levin, CEO of TransClick, a multilingual tools provider. My blog is nyinnovation.com. Two questions, very appropriate to your platform of innovation. One is that given that Craigslist has decimated the business model for local newspapers. Craigslist has decimated the business model for local newspapers. It seems like the solution might be WordPress plus e-commerce plugins for local newspapers to migrate their business model to e-commerce plugins for their advertisers and then draw traffic in through excellent journalists blogging. And I know that you're already on this track, but what can you do to further reach out to the journalistic community of Manhattan, where you have nationwide bloggers, Huffington Post and others, and help them extend their platforms for e-commerce using the e-commerce plugins? And second question is relating to the multilingual character of New York City, where 145 languages are spoken every day. Spanish being the largest, Chinese, Russian, Korean. What can you do to help bring in more multilingual bloggers from, say, the Hispanic community that writes for El Diario or Chinese press or Korean press or Russian press here in New York City, again, to create a more multilingual community?
Okay. Those are two good questions. The first one is almost more than we could tackle in an entire conference. Like, the state of newspapers as a collection of paper with advertisements and classifieds and comics distributed to people, the state of journalism, which happens sometimes in newspapers, sometimes other places, the hyper-local stuff that was presented earlier, I think is actually ultra interesting. And you're also seeing adoption of blogs by Gannett, Hearst, New York Times, who invested in Automattic. I mean, all these folks are very much using these new tools, not even new tools, old tools, to make their publishing a lot more dynamic. I don't know where that goes. If I did have a ready answer for what would save newspapers and everything like that, restore all the money lost from classifieds that are now going to free stuff and the internet, I would tell them. I would tell every single newspaper as possible because I love what they do. You know, I think a lot of us have attachments to what has come on our doorstep every day, even though I read it all on the Kindle now. Actually, Kindle might be it. I love Kindle. I stopped subscribing to Mag. Oh, we got one right there. Nice. It's like at a concert, holding the lighter up, holding the Kindle up. I had stopped subscribing to magazines because they just stack up. You know, I never carry them around, or I put them in my backpack, they get ripped up. Now I just get stuff on the Kindle, and I read things I would have never read before. It's reinvigorated my love of books, which is silly, but I stopped carrying around because they were big and bulky, and I go on like a week trip, and, you know, what do? Do you take like five books, or do you, what if one of them's bad? Do you throw it out? And you know, all these sorts of things. So I like these new interaction methods. The second part about multilingual, that's a good question. WordPress is available in a lot of languages, and largely what we're focused on is the localization, internationalization of the software. So allowing the Spanish community to have the software available and the documentation and the plugins in their own local language and sort of go with that. We don't do too much in cross-language right now, but some of the most interesting things I've seen in that area actually are built on WordPress. It's out of, it's called Global Voices. I believe the people behind it are Rebecca McKinnon and Ethan Zuckerman. Does that sound right? And they've used WordPress as a platform to sort of provide publishing, particularly in places where they have sort of more restrictive governments and, you know, journalism is free and such. And when they have new articles on there, they actually translate them into like 15 languages just by hand. So if a Chinese, you know, sort of citizen journalist uploads something to them, people will translate into Spanish and English and everything else. And I think that's really, really cool. If you want to check out, there's a pretty cool plugin that Qtranslate. I always forget the name of it. But Qtranslate is the coolest multilingual plugin I've seen for WordPress so far. It allows you to basically have all your pages and your posts and everything like that and sort of manually set different translations of them. So you can have your about page, you can have your, how do you say about in another language? I don't know. Yes. See. See. You can have all those things, and it actually provides really robust content management across those. So I would check that out. What's that? A canonical plugin for trans. I agree. We just need to check them out. Oh, there's another person involved with Global Voices. Sorry, I didn't see you earlier. Did I get the Global Voices story right?
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, thank goodness. You got to be careful what you say. The person who built it might be there. We got a question over here.
Doug Stewart, and I blog at literalbarrage.org/blog. That's kind of hard to remember, so just at Zamoose on Twitter. There was the GPL roundtable yesterday. We didn't get to the puppet show today, unfortunately. I was very much looking forward to that. Are you familiar with the premium mod site that has cropped up in the last couple of weeks, which is basically buying the premium themes that are kind of locked behind a paywall and then releasing them sans trademarked elements? And what's your view on that?
Sure, sure. So to repeat it, there was, you know how there's some paid themes and plugins available. And basically what someone's doing is they're kind of like becoming like a Robin Hood of paid stuff and going out there and downloading or buying it and then putting it available for free. I think that that's completely legal under the GPL license. In fact, it's encouraged. You know, this is one of the things. You can say you can sell stuff as GPL, but also you can't take away someone's right to redistribute it or modify it or anything. I think ultimately whether it sticks around or not, I mean, we've always had pirated stuff. I mean, anything that's available for paid, you can download from BitTorrent or something like that. But whether it's going to become part of the community or not depends on how much value it adds. So what I would love to see something like premium mods morph into, rather than just providing the exact same stuff that someone else is doing and just slapping a different name on it, making it free, maybe they could add value to it, like by bug fixes, you know, maybe things that the original developers missed, doing translations, other stuff that works better in an open environment that the paid communities might not have yet. If they could do that, I think it would be a valuable part of the community. As it stands now, it's just like one of those things. It's, of course, going to happen. It's inevitable. I don't really have a strong opinion one way or another. It's sort of neutral. I'm agnostic about it. All right, over here.
Hi, Matt. My name's Matt Probst. I blog at probstm.net. And kind of based on general trends in design and your own blog, it seems like beautiful art and beautiful illustrations being put so much more thought into in blogs. Do you see any change from going away from the out of the box big blue header Kubrick theme when people get that default install?
Good question. I'm going to answer one thing from your question first that occurred to me, and then I'll answer yours. The other thing is that perhaps something like this, like the premium mods, will, when I talk to people who buy themes, they're not just buying the code. What they're buying is the support, the community, the add-ons, everything like that around the code. So I think that perhaps that'll, sorry, perhaps that will encourage more of these folks selling things to emphasize some of these less, more intrinsic value items, propositions that they have. Now, as for design, particularly default design in WordPress, actually the cool thing about Kubrick now is that it's so sort of done that no one uses it, which is kind of nice because you download it and you're like, all right, now I'm going to check out the other 700 themes available. And what we've done is we sort of looked at this. Is the default theme is definitely getting a little long in the tooth. But now, one click is the entire theme repository. So literally, I don't know how many themes are there now, 700, 800, 900, maybe it's broken 1,000 now, is a one-click install from within your dashboard. You don't even have to go to another website. You can browse them all, sort them, say I want two columns with a big blue header and a gray sidebar, and it'll show you all the themes that match that. Moving forward, if I could like wave a magic wand and something could happen, I would love to have like a new theme every year. And just you could kind of tell like how old the WordPress was by what theme they have. Just do like a 2009 theme, a 2010 theme, a 2011. Because where we get caught up every time we talk about a new default theme is because we want a theme that's everything to everybody, which is impossible. You know, some people want a theme that has all the default translation hooks in it, so everything is internationalized and has Git text. But if you're modding a theme, you don't want to see all that weird sort of PHP echo code everywhere. You just want something that's kind of basic. Some people want a framework like Sandbox, where you're never going to edit the HTML. You do everything you can possibly imagine through CSS. And some people want something super sexy by default. you know? And so it's impossible to meet all of those things. I think we just need to kind of keep it more current by switching it up every now and then. Maybe we'll do a contest or something. Would you want to do one? Oh, we got it. Solved. But moreover, we now, the way themes work is not as big. It used to be if we took out the default theme, it would actually cause a lot of problems. And now the way themes are structured, it's a lot easier. And having it be able to one-click install alleviates a lot of this, because we find that even though it's the default, very few people leave Kubrick going. Oh, you want to know something funny? Well, Kubrick launched, it was like very avant-garde for its time, like the rounded corners, the blue gradients. It was hot. Yeah, that was, you know, 5 years ago. But I still meet people who are like, who really like it. If you haven't seen it like 10,000 times before on every, you know, just another WordPress blog, something else we need to change, it actually is kind of pleasant in a generic way. You were going up there. I thought you were like, I'm going to let you finish, but...
Hi, my name is Jamel. I'm more interested on the CMS side of WordPress. Just to tell you a short story, I'm working for a big, huge company in France, uh-huh. And we had a problem last year, and we wanted to change the corporate website. Uh-huh. And I came to the IT, and I said, okay, I know a great tool called WordPress. And nobody knew about it in France because the IT is, you know, focused on, like, IBM product, you know, the story. And so my question is, do you think you're going to evolve to a more CMS product, or WordPress will always be first a blogging product?
That's a good question. I'm going to do ask the audience here. So here, who here in the audience is using WordPress for not a blog at all, just as a website manager? That's impressive. That's like 80, 90% of the audience.
That's what I think.
I see that as the fastest growing use of WordPress today. It used to be that you have your blog that you plug into your existing site, and now you have your WordPress and you plug everything else into that. You know, your e-commerce, your forums, your everything else. And so we're sort of still adapting to this because that was not how WordPress started at all. And in fact, you know, when we added the pages feature, that was something that other blogging systems didn't have, and some still haven't added until relatively recently. So we're still kind of growing into this. My personal philosophy with the CMS features is that the word CMS is dangerous. Like, what it means to me, it means something different to everyone. And what it means to me is a big clunky piece of software that does too much, has the whole kitchen sink thrown in, and it's hard to use. And I don't want WordPress to be that. So we have to figure out what are the things when people say CMS, what do they mean? And so that's a lot of things I talk to people about at WordCamps. Some people mean they want role management, where they want to control what certain users do and have access to. Some people mean they want workflow. They want someone to say, submit something for review, and then the editor has to sign off on it, or their boss
has to. That was one of my main problems.
Yeah.
The workflow.
Some people want multilingual capabilities. I mean, there's really a full range of things that people mean when they say CMS. So what's the WordPress approach to this? Well, we go back to our core philosophy, which is to keep the core small, light, fast, and modular, adaptable. So what we'll do is we'll bring in sort of the 80-20, the 20% we can do that meets 80% of the needs. So that's things like the pages feature, page templates, front custom page as a home page, you know, the new menu stuff we put in, all these sorts of features that allow you to do, actually you can create amazing websites without using any plugins at all. And then for things like workflow, which are really common needs that we hear from you, the community, everyone, hopefully point to the best plugins out there. I mean, there's probably like 5 or 6 workflow plugins. And therein sort of takes us back to the canonical plugins discussion, which I guess you guys have heard a couple times now. We're still working out what that means. But the idea is that there's 5 plugins that do workflow. What if we could get those 5 developers working together to make one super plugin, like Transformers, they combine and, like, you know, attack the workflow problems of the world? That would be awesome. And that's kind of the open source way. That's how WordPress works. It's a lot of people working together towards a common goal. So if we can align people philosophically, that's the most important thing first. Then we can get them working together, and then we can perhaps create something that I could say to you, this is the best workflow plugin in the world. And here's a pack of actually 6 plugins that's sort of our CMS pack. It adds workflow and revision and all this other stuff that sort of does everything at once. And, you know, maybe someday we'll create something like a BuddyPress for that, where it's sort of a custom marketing on top of it. BuddyPress is really just a package of a couple plugins. How many is it? 6 plugins? 8 plugins. Oh, man, it's getting fancy. But it's just 8 plugins. But look how much it transforms WordPress. It completely changes everything it does. So perhaps we'll have something similar for CMS in the future. But in the meantime, I like sort of the Darwinian process that's happening, where different people are trying out different things. You sort of have a free market of ideas and features. And they're both growing and waning, and some developments are doing well. And we get to see, just like Firefox can track which extensions are most popular, we see which plugins are most popular. And we can see what's doing well and what we should probably think about for core inclusion. That's sort of the CMS plan right now. We're not ignoring it. And this isn't sort of a new way of developing things. This is how we've developed WordPress from the very beginning. Watching it really closely, I mean, we'd be silly not to. So how much of the audience raised their hand there? Okay. Thanks for your question.
Thank you.
All right, over here. Good.
So,
I'm in New York. Of course it's good.
So this weekend we saw Steve give a preview of RoloPress. Uh-huh. And just kind of a new way of a new use of WordPress. What hasn't been thought of or developed yet that you want to see?
Oh, that's a good one. Oh man, my wish list is a mile long. I was telling it to Steve. So for those who don't know, RoloPress is kind of like a, I guess the name comes from Rolodex. So it's like Rolodex in your WordPress. And it's a contact manager for everything, all your contacts, but it's a WordPress theme, essentially, which is crazy when you think about it. Like, that's exactly the vision of WordPress being realized, a sort of, you know, a content management kernel, if you will, that can do a million different things. So that's really cool. I talked to you afterwards, and I said, you know, this is sort of a generic UI for custom fields, essentially. You can have arbitrary metadata attached to objects. I would love that for my record collection, because, you know, I have all these vinyl LPs. Remember those? And there's no iTunes for that. I can't type in the name of a song and get everything. I kind of want a little bit of a database for all of these. Kind of old. I feel very old school. I almost made a spreadsheet on Google Docs, of course, but still a spreadsheet. And that's kind of interesting to me. If you think about it, so there's specific requests. I would love like a record manager, an LP manager. I would love a contact thing, which is why I'm glad you're building that. I would love, oh, this is one of my favorites. I want a theme that's just notes. So take the front-end editing stuff of P2 and the other things, like the Ajax edits, and just make a theme, which is essentially like a notepad. Because what I want is, I do a lot of text files. Does anyone else here do that? Like, you got a bunch of text files on your desktop, and you like, and you use multiple computers and get out of sync, and I've tried putting them in a subversion and Dropbox, and it just never works. And so what I just want is a blog, because WordPress has revisions, we have pages, we have organizations, we have search, we have authors, we have everything you need there for almost like a little personal wiki. I just don't want it to look anything like a wiki. I want it to look more like a backpack with a list of pages on the left and a big place to edit, a big text area on the right where I can just put stuff. And then autosave every second, because I never want to hit a save button again. You're a computer. Just save everything I do. You have plenty of space. Sorry, frustration with computers. and that would be awesome. So, but if you look at the sort of the kernel of WordPress, you have post, which is just an object. You put any sort of object in post. You have comments on that, which is great for interaction or community. You have post meta, which is the custom fields attached to any object. So you can have arbitrary metadata attached to any object. And then on top of it, you have taxonomies. And this is geeky, but it's like arbitrary classifications, hierarchies, and organizations, even ordering of all of those things I just said. So for any ID, for any comment, for any anything. You can do taxonomies for comments. I've never seen anyone do it, but you can. The framework's there. So if you think about that, oh, you've done it? You're crazy. That's kind of cool. I'm a little scared, though. It was like, WordCamp San Francisco, we found out a guy had like 800 plugins or something. I wasn't sure to be excited or like back away a little. Like 800 plugins. Well, that's awesome, though. You're using taxonomies for comments, and that's what the system was designed for. And I'm surprised, continually surprised and amazed every day by what people build on top of that. So thank you, Steve, and thank you anyone else who's working on that. And whoever builds the theme thing, I'll take you out to dinner. The notes thing, I'll take you to dinner. Over here?
Would you talk about 3.0?
What's that?
WordPress 3.0.
Oh, that was a question.
would you talk about it?
That is a version which will come after WordPress 2.9. So seriously, though, because people think, oh, 3.0 is going to be this huge thing, like the end of the world release. And it's really, we are now battling version number inflation. You see some open source projects that's like 5.2.24. Drives me crazy. So after 0.9, we're going to roll over to 3.0. And I got some cool plans for it. So kind of what goes into 3.0 is going to be whatever we wanted to do for 2.9 that didn't make it, which is kind of every release. I see Mark nodding over there. It's but more importantly, the thing we have slated for that timeline is the merge of MU and WordPress. Again, it's the Transformers. So what we're doing is MU has always been sort of like a red-headed step-cousin of WordPress, where it doesn't release. The release cycle often lags by a week or two. It used to be not all plugins worked. We fixed all those things. We've unified a lot of the code bases. And just as an engineer, you look at it, like, I got 99% of the same code in these two places. Why am I maintaining it in two different places? So we're actually going to merge them. From a user point of view, that probably means nothing to you. Like, you should just upgrade to WordPress 3.0 and nothing happens, whether you're using MU or WordPress. It will continue to work just as before. There'll probably be like a config line, WP config flag that sort of enables all the MU stuff. But if you're developing on top of MU, or I guess if you're using it too, you'll start to see a lot more attention paid to that code, because where previously it just had a single developer who's been working on it for, I guess, 4 or 5 years now, it'll have the entire WordPress community improving MU, just like we improve and work on WordPress. So you'll see the UI start to get better, some of the administration menus. We're going to do audits of the code, and also just perhaps remove some duplication or clean up some things that might be a little messier there. I'm really excited about this, because to me, you know, sometimes people ask me, why don't you just allow infinite blogs with every single WordPress? Well, it's kind of like a different mindset you're in when you're doing a regular WordPress versus an MU. Are you going to have one blog? It's like one versus many. Do you want to host? And there's different use cases. Do you want to host like a million blogs, like WordPress.com? Well, MU can do that. Or are you just managing like 20 blogs for clients, and you're getting tired of updating them all individually? Well, MU can do that too. Those are kind of different use cases, and we need to figure out how to optimize for each of those. So that's sort of the big thing for 3.0. If I had to have like a wish list or something that I really wanted in it, that's it. Well, nah, I won't say it. I won't say it. I want it to be a surprise. I got to hold some stuff back, right? All right, over here. Or maybe I'll say it at the end.
Hey, how you doing, Matt?
Hey.
My name is Alan Cole. My blog is alancole.com/WordPress.
Cool.
There was a few months back, I think I saw a video where you were talking, it was on WordPress.tv.
Cool.
You were talking about GPL and open source and how it had some real world implications. Mushan earlier talked about just like using the concept of open source to, you know, like it, as it relates to design. And I was just kind of curious about some of your ideas about some of those, like other ways to apply open source ideals to like real world and people situations?
That's a good question. So it's interesting. So for me, obviously, WordPress is a huge part of my life, right? It's kind of the core of almost every waking hour I have. But the most powerful idea I've been exposed to in my life is that of open source and free software, and particularly with regards in the context of the GPL license. The GPL license, a lot of people actually don't know what it means. It's kind of like a bill of rights that says, here are the things, you're living in this country, this software country, and here are the things that you can always do. You have the freedom to use the software for any purpose, which means I can't tell you you can't run a website for a topic I don't like, or commercial versus non-commercial. You can use it for whatever you like. You have the freedom to modify the software, which is really important. Like, imagine if you got a car, well, I guess they do this now, and you just open up the hood and it's a black box. That is actually true, but 20 years ago, when we actually used to fix our cars, that would have been really annoying. And the same thing, I get the same annoyance from proprietary software. Like, I want to be able to open the hood if there's a bug that maybe the developers don't care about and fix it. I want to be able to distribute that fix, either back to the original developers or to my friends. And so the right to fork is kind of the fundamental open source. It's also a very American idea. Like, America is kind of a fork of England, right? And then finally, you have the you don't need permission for anyone to do that. So I don't need to get someone's permission if I want to make a modification. Any of you could download WordPress today, search and replace WordPress, and call it, like, you know, not WordPress or not press or whatever you like, New York Press, and that's fine. You could redistribute it to your friends. You could market it. You could put up a website. That's, in fact, what the license explicitly encourages. And if you look at the birth of WordPress, in fact, WordPress was not original. It actually came out of an existing open project called B2 Cafe Log. And what happened was WordPress originally a fork of the code, where the code had sort of stopped development. Myself and a guy in England named Mike Little sort of took it and said, well, I think we can make this better. So another thing I've noticed in my life is the more open, the more I've given away, the more I've gotten back. And so that seems to me just sort of a fundamental, I don't know if it's karmic or what, but that just seems to be a way that the universe has worked, and particularly on the web, because the web sort of breaks down the geographic barriers for sharing and collaboration and everything like that. And you get amazing outcomes. You get the Wikipedia, you get WordPress, you get Firefox, you get these things that could never be built by a single company. They're built by a community. It's like an Amish barn raising. Like, all of us together have built WordPress. I can't take the credit for it, because if it was just me, none of us would be here. I'd be buying a dirty dog on the corner, you know? A dirty water dog, sorry. I don't know what a dirty dog is. Someone's going to send me a link to Urban Dictionary later. So it's all together we built this. Now, the beautiful thing about open source, and in particular, once you get a taste of that freedom, you want it everywhere in your life. So once you've experienced the ability to modify and the beauty of a community, the information being free on Wikipedia, once you get a taste of that, you think, well, why does my other software not work this way yet? Or even beyond, why is our voting system a black box? Shouldn't I be able to see the code at the heart of our democracy that registered votes, records them, prints out a record? Why is that not open source? It's not for security. Security by obscurity was, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Invalidated? Years ago, decades ago. The more open something is, actually, the more secure it is, because the best minds in the world are going to look at it and try to figure out what are the problems. Government, are there wikis for every law that's passed? Can you see where every single line came from? It just like in WordPress and every open source project, you have source control. So what's the idea of source control applied to laws and to traffic signs and to everything that happens in our world? I'm pretty excited about that. We're starting to see taste of this through sort of the open data movement. I mean, the new administration has been great about that. In San Francisco, they're doing like an SF data thing, where they're just opening up a lot of this data that is created by the government. And so by definition, our tax is paid for it. It should be open. It should be accessible. And you see some cool stuff happening for that. I would love to see that extended to software. Why do tax dollars I spend go to proprietary software that isn't actually owned by the people, just owned proprietarily by a single company or a single entity? In theory, just like, you know, the White House photography takes photos, those are in the public domain. Why is that all code produced or paid for by the government not also in the public domain? Yeah, there's all sorts of, and there's a ton of stuff to figure out along the way. Of course, we don't want to like open source our secret keep bad guys out system or something, but there's like 1% of that, and there's 99% of the other stuff that we deal with every day and could be, I think, drastically improved if it was developed and shown and just more transparent. So that's kind of what I hope happens with the open source movement, and where I think it evolves to is it goes just beyond software. Although software can have a huge, huge impact in the world, but it goes beyond that. It's affecting our everyday lives. What over here?
Hi, Matthew. I'm Gail Davis, Global Vibe Magazine and the Goldwaters Group, located in London and New York. The question I have for you is, I know you've told us what's coming up next with 3.0 and everything, but ultimately your goal of where you see WordPress going, let's say 4 years from now, where do you see WordPress for bloggers, developers, people who are programmers and so forth? Do you see those worlds coming together as one, or what are your thoughts for the future and what you want to say?
Yeah. I'm really bad at predictions. I could tell you what I thought WordPress would look like in 5 years. I'd probably be totally wrong. But you know what they say, the best way to predict the future is to invent it. So I know that there's certain principles that are held true by the WordPress community. One is the commitment to open source. So I'm absolutely certain in 5 years WordPress will be just as open as it is today. Other thing is we've always had an attachment in the past has been to web standards, but really just the idea of openness and data and standards. And that manifests itself, you know, 5 years ago when we started. That was we switched to XHTML and started using CSS for our layouts, which was avant-garde at the time, and now it's just taken for granted. Today, maybe that's supporting things like OAuth or making all the data available in WordPress in as many formats as possible. Just like, I don't know if you know this, but you can add a query string to any feed and get it not only as RSS 2, RSS 1, Atom 3, Atom 1. Why can't you get that as a PHP serialized array and as JSON and everything like that? I mean, this is just output templates. So just make all that as open as possible. What I'm sure of, the other thing I'm sure of, the third thing I'd be sure of is that it's always community driven. So what I said for 3.0 is kind of a very high level idea of where we're probably going to end up, but the actual features that will be in that are going to be determined a large part by you guys. What you say to me when you talk to me, what you guys contribute in terms of code in it, and also what you vote for and express your interest either by using plugins or voting for things in the ideas forum. It's a large part of what the decision process we go to whenever we do a release. We say, we sit down. There's always this quiet period right after a release. You get a rush. You get like, you know, we'll do like 500,000 downloads in 3 days, and then we're like, woohoo! And then we're like, okay, what next? That's always kind of a weird moment. So going forward to that, it's up to you.
And the only other question I have is VideoPress. What are your thoughts about VideoPress with WordPress?
Sure. Has anyone seen VideoPress or checked it out yet? It's kind of a new product. So it's a new product that Automattic released. I think it's $60 a year. And the idea is that just right from within your dashboard of WordPress, you can upload video, and it's super HD. There's no weird terms of service, so you keep ownership of all your content. And then there's some geeky video stuff. We kind of built it because we have this one guy who's just nuts about video. And I didn't know this, but apparently there's like 30 frames per second and then 24 frames per second. And some people can tell the difference. And if apparently one of the things a lot of the video sites do is they'll take your 24 frames per second and like put it at 30 frames per second and then looks jittery or just weird stuff like that. So we have this video freak and he was like, this is the system I want to use. So we kind of built that. And we're making it available as a paid thing, you know, $60 a year, $5 a month. But we also open sourced everything behind it. So the entire framework for transcoding the videos, serving them, the player, everything is completely open source. So if someone wanted, they can run it themselves. Now, realistically, today, it's kind of a pain in the butt to host and serve video. If you did it on your web host, they tell you they give you 200 gigs of hosting. If you started serving video off it, they'd shut you down in a second.
Hello.
So there's sort of an arbitrage there. There's also great free places. You can put your video on Vimeo, YouTube, anything like that, and they'll host it forever. That's just sort of, we're trying to create another alternative there. Typically, where we fit into the market is on the high end. You know, people at the bottom of the pyramid is going to be the YouTubes, the Vimeos, everything like that. For people who are super obsessed with these little nitpicky details and want to brand the player and own everything and all that jazz, might be a good opportunity.
Thank you.
No problem. Right over here.
Hey, Matt,
what does your shirt say? WP Coder?
Yeah, I'm Dan Philip, and I'm one of the managers and developers at WP Coder.
Cool.
I got a question we get a lot of times from our clients, and that's, you know, we're adding lots of features to WordPress, which is really cool. But sometimes they think the interface is too complicated, you know, like they might just need a really simple site. Are there any plans, like, of ways you can dumb down the interface for simpler sites or even put it into, like, you can put it into modules? I think Expression Engine does that really well, where you can activate the things you want, just leave the things you don't need to go. Is that something you might introduce?
I've seen some cool. Does anyone use any plugins for this? What do you use?
You can just use Role Manager or some capability plugin.
Yeah, so roles is super powerful on WordPress. So you recommended the Role Manager plugin. So Role Manager is dead. Long live Role Manager. So one of the Role Manager plugins, and actually it's kind of neat. If you ever log into WordPress as an author, not an editor, a bunch of stuff just magically disappears. So in theory, using this, every single screen, every single thing on there can be hidden through roles. I guess we got another answer over there.
Yeah.
Yell. On off menus. So that it was called menus?
It's called menus.
Menus. Simplicity in naming. Cool. So those are the things I'd recommend for now. So the point, does some of that go into WordPress core? It's kind of to the earlier question about WordPress becoming a CMS. Maybe. Maybe that if enough people ask for that functionality, it seems like something which is really core. Maybe that's something, there's a screen on WordPress that lets you turn stuff off as an administrator.
Sure.
I like it. I like that approach though, because as yeah, I love simple, elegant interfaces, and WordPress does a lot for a lot of people. And if you're building something for a client, it would actually be a lot nicer for them if you could just remove most of that.
Sure. Thank you.
Cool. I hope that answers it. Or let us know how those plugins work out. Whatever.
Hi. So, Mushan.com, Shual.com. I wanted to ask about I'm sorry to bring up a subject from Twitter's trending topics, but Google Wave.
Google
and
it.
And how there's a lot of discussion both on the collaboration side, on the publishing side, and and the distribution side, the decentralization of content. How does that fit into WordPress? How do you think that might change WordPress? What were your thoughts about WordPress when you first heard about it?
Yeah. Well, my first thought is like, well, actually, it was released right before WordCamp San Francisco. And what was interesting to me is by Sunday when we did the Developer Day, someone did a presentation where they actually showed a Google Wave posting to WordPress. I didn't really understand at that point. Now that I've checked it out, have you guys seen this Google Wave? It's kind of amazing. Google's one of the only companies in the world that can, I think, has created the thing that will eventually kill one of their biggest products, which is Gmail. We'll see. Like, again, I'm not good at predictions. But basically, it's like a combination of chat and wikis and like real-time blogging. It looks kind of like P2 in some ways. It's got like everything going on at once. And that's pretty neat. They've also taken a cool approach to it where they've open-sourced all the servers and protocols. So in theory, just like IMAP, just like email, I don't have to be on Google to take advantage of this. I could have my own Google Wave server. I don't know what it'd be called, just like I run my own mail server and interact transparently with everyone else out there. And it uses Jabber and other things on the sort of underneath the hood. I think that's amazing. And I wonder, maybe it doesn't have so much to do, it doesn't influence publishing as much, but how does that change comments? Like, what if every comment under your post turns into sort of like a real-time chat? And how does that work? And how do you archive that? What does that look like? What does that chat look like 6 months after the post has been done? Or maybe people who come to your blog can sort of interact with you, and that's public or that's private. I really don't know. It's very raw technology. Anyone who's used Google Wave, most of the posts on there are like, does this work? And then someone else saying, does this work? So I haven't really seen like a killer app for it yet, but I think that's kind of the Google way. They put it out there just as a raw technology, and over time they're going to start to build some cool things on top of it. So I'm excited about that. Thanks.
One thing. Have you been thinking whether WordPress.com might be serving a Wave account as well at some point?
Would we be a Wave client? Possibly, totally. We've been having a lot of fun with sort of Jabber and real-time stuff. It's not really widely known, but every single WordPress.com account is also a Jabber chat account. And you can log into it and chat with people, which no one ever does. But you can also subscribe to things. Like I could say sub, you know, I can ask cheeseburger. And this literally before the page is done loading, when they post a new post, you'll get a notification of it. And it's ultra scalable, works for tens of thousands of folks, things like that. And so we're playing around with that, wondering like, could we use a technology like Bosch to enable sort of push Jabber on every single page on WordPress.com or something like that. That would be cool. I don't know how that works yet. Like, a lot of times, the answer to this isn't, is it possible? But, like, how do people interact with this? It's like all the live streaming stuff. Like, yeah, I can grab everything. Everything has an RSS feed. Everything can be aggregated in one place. But what is that like when someone visits my site for the first time? Like, what is that experience? Is it out of context to see, like, my Twitters and my Flickr and everything else kind of mashed together? Or are they really interested in it? Thank
hey,
you.
Anil Dash, dashes.com. I got a two-part question.
Okay.
The first, I think, builds off of what you just said. You've done a lot of cool stuff with real-time, with RSS Cloud. Uh-huh. People are playing with PubSub, HubBub. But the tech makes it possible to do distributed real-time. Uh-huh. And when WordPress.org became WordPress.com, when we made TypePad, whatever it was, we centralized these services. And all of Twitter, all of Facebook are totally centralized. Mm-hmm. And we gave up something of the promise of the web being decentralized, okay. Right? And a little bit of control, where you and I both still run our own sites on our own software that we can hack and do whatever we want. Is this a bug we should fix? That we have these centralized services? When every company can run its own email, there's still Gmail, it's still popular, there are big services, but we can run our own. So that's kind of part one. And then part two is just generally, what are the other projects and interesting technologies that are out there that you think are influencing you, that you think are new?
Good question. So on the first part, is the centralization a bug? Absolutely. You know, the internet, in some ways, abhors centralization and also worships it. I see it sort of like a technical arbitrage. Like today, it is easier to build a social network when you have all the people in the same database, and you can cache them all in the same memcache, and you can sort of do privacy and all these sorts of features that are much easier to do when it's on one service. Search used to also be easier to do when everything was hosted on one server in one place. But now Google has multiple copies of the internet in memory. Now, when I think about that, it boggles my mind. Like, the entire internet in RAM? And multiple copies all over the world? In theory, what I heard was that they can fit the internet on about 3,200 servers. And so they obviously have hundreds of thousands of servers. They might have like 100 copies of the internet. That's kind of cool. I want one of those. So they solve that problem. Search is different from social networking interaction or from real-time notifications or a Twitter-like interaction model. If a search is 5 minutes out of date, you don't really notice. If your Twitter is missing things that are 5 minutes out of date, you'll never see it because by the time it comes in, it'll be too far down the stream. So all these things have to be figured out. I guess the technology that I'm most excited about there, PubSub, HubHub, and RSS Cloud, I think are really important because it takes something existing, which we can all parse, everyone can parse in the world, RSS, and sort of adds a real-time aspect to it. Not unlike the original promise of remember the ping servers. You know, you had blo.gs, weblogs.com, ping-o-matic, all these things, and that was kind of how it worked, except it had a lot of overhead. And we're kind of technically making this so it has less overhead. So maybe, you know, I still remember like 5 years ago, there was this whole thing around fat pings. So the idea that when you did a post, you would send out the entire post to all these different services. So they wouldn't have to come to you to index it. They could just trust whatever you sent them. And that was the whole thing. And it's kind of coming back. Fat pings are in again, except we've thought of a better name than fat for them. Now it's real time. Jabber, to me, is the most interesting technology there because you have something which is ultra scalable, true real time, not like Ajax polling or anything like that. You have like push real time and a completely open standard that is supported by, say, Google as, you know, one person in their ring. I think what's going to start to happen is perhaps we'll start to see more specialized Jabber clients. So right now, you know, like I said, the subscribe to WordPress blogs, you type in sub to like a fake buddy and then you start getting IMs from it. That's not a great interaction method. That doesn't look as sweet or sexy as my Twitter client or Twitterific or TweetDeck or anything like that. So the things we can do on top of these other UIs, what are the user interfaces for getting these real-time notifications? And I think the secondary question is, to me, real-time works when something is small enough. You're old school, so you remember when blog search really worked? It was when there were like 5 million blogs in the world, and they were all cool people. Remember when Dig was awesome? It's because it was like all your friends were there, and it was all tech stuff. The overlap between their users and what I cared about was very high. Now they've gone more mainstream. That overlap isn't as much, so I just don't find it as interesting. We even had the same problem on the WordPress.com homepage. We used to algorithmically bounce up the most popular stuff on there, and like when it was Scoble and me and everyone else on there, I'd like the homepage every day, and now I'm like, why is this Korean pop star on the homepage, and like, who's Britney Spears? Why can't she get underwear? And, you know, all these things. Like, get off my homepage. And so the next thing is really all around personalization, I think. So we have all these inputs, and the fact that they can be real-time or 5 minutes late or 2 hours late isn't as important to me as the filters. And the amount, you know, 30 years ago, the problem was access to information. Like, does anyone remember, like, going to the library and the card catalog? And you'd, like, pull a drawer. Oh, we got some people raising their hand. You pull the drawer, you'd page to something, and you'd walk over, find a book, climb up. I mean, we're going to tell our children about this. Or we walked uphill in the snow to get information. And now, you know, this, what's the statistic? It's like 23 hours of content uploaded to YouTube every minute. More content is produced on the web every 10 seconds than any of us could consume in an entire lifetime. So filters become the most important thing. I think what's going to be one of the best filters is the people you know and love in real life. So maybe call it your social graph if we want to be geeky about it. That, the people who you would donate a kidney to, who you actually call, who you care about, the things that they care about and their interest and everything around that, I think is going to become a very important filter for just too much stuff on the web. And that's where, you know, to me, some of the earliest cool blogs were, I mean, you did it. You had a link blog. Dave Weiner was a link blog. I'm kind of a link blog. Everyone else, we were serving as filters for the wider web. We'd have all our inputs, the 200 feeds we read, or our friends who send us stuff, or IMS stuff, and then we'd filter that for our audiences. And I think that's a really cool interaction mechanism, and one that has been surprisingly persistent, as blogging has died like 4 times now, and it's still stuck around. So we'll see where that goes. Maybe it's BuddyPress. over here.
Hi, I'm Courtney Henley Anderson, and my column is thatgirlattheparty.com. We heard about some really cool plugins, and there's like 7 zillion of them. Could you tell us what are some of your favorites, especially media plugins?
So this isn't fair, because often if I have a favorite plugin, it ends up in WordPress. I don't know. It's like a coincidence. I don't know how it happens. But so I actually don't run as many plugins on my site. I have a couple going right now. I have one called Community Tags, which allows tags on the site, and then it goes into a moderation queue. I use it for people tagging, so I have a lot of photos on my site. And you can go into it and say, you know, Elvis Presley is in this photo, and then it gets submitted, and then if I approve that, you'll see sort of a page with all the Elvis Presley photos. That's one I'm using. I use another one called Redirection, which is really cool. Basically, it finds all the 404s on your page, either mistakes you made or mistakes people made linking to you, and it allows you to redirect them any place you like. It's really kind of a handy, just nice. It's sort of free traffic. Blog subscriptions, the idea of being able to blog, subscribe to a blog via email, subscribe to comments via email. I think those are both names of plugins. We're not very creative in the WordPress world. And everything's like WP-dash. WP-subscribe. So those are some of the ones I use. If you asked, so on average, the average WordPress blog has about 5 plugins. And there's a long tail distribution. So everyone in this room, it's unlikely that any two of us are running the exact same WordPress, which is kind of insane when you think about it, like just the diversity of it. It's like Firefox. Like, who runs Firefox here? All right, everyone's going to raise their hand. Who runs Firefox with no extensions? You do, because it comes with the default extension. You have at least one. It's a trick question. I'm sorry. So that's sort of the future of WordPress, I think, as well, because there's no such thing as killer software anymore. There's no such thing as a killer feature. There's 1,000 killer features, and everyone has a different 20. And so this evolution is why we're becoming more of a platform rather than a throw everything in the kitchen sink feature into one big thing. That's how software used to be, and it got big and bloated and slow and eventually unusable. It would collapse under its own weight. The new model that every successful open source and many successful other platforms are going is the acceptance you're not going to build everything cool. And the plugin ecosystem, to me, is the most interesting part of WordPress today, which is why we keep such a close eye on it. What over here?
Hey, Matt. My name is Ned. I work for Time Inc. I do EW.com, so I just want to personally apologize for messing up your homepage and for getting too much pop gossip in there.
It's all right. It's all right. We still like it.
We run EW.com. Half of it is on WordPress.com. The other half of it is using a very expensive content management system called Vignette. And how do I say to the people above me at Time Inc., move away from the expensive system, WordPress is, I mean, what would you say to them to convince them that WordPress is the answer?
I would say, hey, look, I transparently imported all our content into this thing. Don't fire me.
Well, no, that one, we moved from TypePad, but, you know, we moved from one block system to another, but we still have all this content that
Vignette. What was that?
We moved from TypePad for the blogs, but as far as our old content, that's a lot in Vignette. So
yeah.
What would you say that convince them that WordPress can do everything?
So I've said everything you could imagine to convince people that. I found that nothing is effective as showing them. So we now have the WordPress.org/showcase, which is sort of a user-submitted directory curated of the best stuff in the WordPress world. And sometimes it's really popular things, like your blogs are in there, other things like that. Sometimes it's like a super innovative use of WordPress, where you don't even recognize it being like WordPress. Like, you kind of have to dig into the code to see it's even running our software. So those types of things, I find that just showing someone, look what you can do, and then often look at what someone else did. So, you know, if I were in your place, I would point to Wired.com, which was on like Web Spinner or one of these multi-million dollar old expensive content management systems. Now 100% of their web presence, the magazine articles, the blogs, everything is going through WordPress. That's kind of killer. And you know what? Those guys are in New York. You could call them up, grab lunch with them, say like, how did you do it? Could you show us? Would you tell my boss? Would you?
Well, they're like the rival company, so it can't really.
Even better, right? They're doing it. We're going to be left behind. And then you should also talk to Renan back there. It'll help you out.
All right. Thank you very much.
No problem. All right. So I guess we're coming out of time. So we'll do two more. Is this a really good question over there?
I don't know.
All right. So you first, and then you'll close it down with the best question ever. No pressure.
My name's James Gibson. My site is neuemodernist.com. It's new in German, but neuemodernist.
new in German.
Yeah, exactly. we're really excited as designers about HTML5 and CSS3. as you guys know. And, you know, we know that IE is holding us back a little bit. There's a lot we can do. Really stoked. When should we move forward with WordPress, with theme development specifically?
As soon as possible, because I think that, well, the beautiful thing about these new technologies is they degrade gracefully. You can start using CSS3 stuff. I mean, we do it all the time on WordPress, all the rounded corners. Open up WordPress dashboard in like an old version of IE. It's like, what happened here? Everything's blocky and ugly. That's okay. Like, I figure that if you're still there, you don't mind. And we provide a better experience for the folks on modern browsers, Safari, Chrome, IE8 even is pretty good, all these sorts of things. Firefox, obviously. So just that sort of idea of graceful degradation and progressive enhancement, I think, is the buzzword they use to say, have some cool stuff be available for some folks, and then if it's not there, just gracefully go back. Inside WordPress, we're going to start taking advantage of this stuff as soon as possible. We've already done some early things with Gears, or the equivalent of offline storage. The next thing I want to do is maybe multi-file upload without using Flash. Right? Wouldn't that be awesome? All these sorts of things that we currently rely on hacks for, you know, be it going to Flash or using a desktop application with Air. Or sometimes it's not even hack, but we're, you know, got 2,000 lines of jQuery, right, to make something work right. I picture a day where every release of WordPress gets smaller and smaller just because the technology is either more is built in the browsers or just more becomes more efficient, that we can actually shrink it and remove all the compatibility code, move the IE6 stuff, everything, and just go forward. Now, realistically, we sort of try to be as accessible as possible. It's now down, I think, 14% of our users are still on PHP 4, but we maintain PHP 4 compatibility, because that's 14% of users. That might be 2 million people, you know? So when you think of it that way, you know, that's a small city. I don't want to piss off a small city by breaking their software and not upgrading. The same thing, I don't want to piss off the 8 or 10% of people still on IE6, because they're probably stuck there. Like, no one's on anymore from choice. Right? There's better versions of Internet Explorer. There's better versions of every other browser out there. And so, you know, how can we help them out? Maybe it's Chrome Frame. Maybe it's, I don't know. Those things are pretty subversive. But start doing it right away. And in fact, I love the coolest stuff. And you've all seen this, but the new font stuff, embedded fonts, yes. Amazing. Yes. This is like Mecca. Anyone who has anything, cares about design or anything, it's just the future. I love it.
Thank you.
Last question.
Right.
Before Jane gets the
that guy actually stole my question a little bit, because I was regards to HTML5. I'm Peter, by the way, from Stockholm, Sweden. Mm-hmm. Have you seen any use cases for HTML5 yet? Any like good examples of theme development for HTML5? Because it seems to me like the whole template structure or the theme structure for WordPress is sort of modeled after HTML5, but in advance, because there was no way of knowing what HTML5 was going to be like a couple of years ago, with all the new HTML elements like sidebar and header and footer. And yeah, it seems almost a perfect match for HTML5.
Yeah, so not a ton of like blow your mind examples yet, but it's just sort of the progressive stuff. So we're starting to see rich fonts being enabled through font embedding or services like Typekit. We're starting to see things like in WordPress. We're now rounding the corners without using like 8 different transparent GIFs. You know, this sort of idea. Those rounded corner GIFs are like the new spacer pixel. Remember those? The 1x1 transparent pixel you do all your layouts with back when you had tables in your house? All those sorts of things. And for us and for the web in general, I just think as it becomes available, you know, once a major browser ships support for it, we start to put it in. And the upgrade rates of these browsers are starting to get really good. Firefox now is an amazing update mechanism. In fact, it's what we're modeling the WordPress mechanism for. Chrome will automatically upgrade you without asking. Chrome upgrades you. All these things sort of happen in the background. So the web is moving at a faster pace. And in fact, the friends I have who work on that, they say, we just want to make it iterate faster. We don't really care where it's going. We just want it to happen faster. We never want it again to be 4 years between browser innovation and browser releases. That just can't work because the web's moving too fast. So that's what I'm hoping for and looking for. That's sort of an answer, but we're running out of time. And so just in closing, I want to say thank you to everybody. This has been an amazing weekend, and I love it. One of the best WordCamps ever. So, thank you.